This book belongs to none but me, for there's my name inside to see. To steal this book, if you should try, it's by the throat you'll hang high. And ravens then will gather about to find your eyes and pull them out. And when you're screaming, oh, 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 remember, you deserved this woe. In 2017, the CBC published a piece reporting that Murakami novels were the most stolen books in Toronto. Before that, it was anything by Bukowski, Burroughs, and On the Road by Jack Kerouac. Books are cheap. They cost about $4 to make. They cost more for bookshops to purchase, but still, nowadays, stealing books isn't a high crime. One of the bookshops interviewed suggested that the best solution was that used bookstores only buy books with credit cards and that booksellers mark their books so that they can be traced. But that's about it. At most, the RCMP is going to give you a fine. But what about 500 years ago? What about when books took 15 months to create? A time when scribes could only copy 2 books a year, working only during the day since candlelight wasn't sufficient for their detailed work and was far too much of a hazard. Not only painstakingly copying text, and I mean painstakingly, one scribe at the end of his book wrote, "Now I've written the whole thing, for Christ's sakes, give me a drink." Another said, "It extinguishes the light from the eyes, it bends the back, it crushes the viscera and the ribs, it brings forth pain to the kidneys and weariness to the whole body," about copying texts. So not only painstakingly copying the text, but creating beautiful and intricate illustrations and decor to adorn the book. There were no security lockboxes, no security cameras, only the power of the written word. Only a book curse to protect the text. Bookmaking was a laborious thing in our not-too-distant past. You'd have a scribe copy out a text, Greek and Latin stories for a long time, and then a lot of holy texts as Christianity grew. It would be passed on to an illustrator who would then pass it on to a binder that would sew it all together. The manuscripts would be sent from monastery to monastery as different monks had different roles and areas of expertise. It was an immense effort of time, resource, and expense. Not only would losing a book mean an awful loss of money and time, but also would be very difficult to reproduce and would normally mean a loss of that knowledge to the monastery and the community. When it came to protecting these books, a few options were available. One option was to chain your book to the library shelf. While this meant attaching a metal ring to the book and locking a book to one location, it was very effective. You'd have to tear a book off of its chain if you wanted to steal it, and hopefully by then somebody would have heard you. Just like walking into an Apple store where all the iPhones are chained down to the table, it makes things a lot harder to get away with. As I learned from a piece by Eric Quackle, these would be common for books that were in library settings, chained libraries. It was a way to safeguard a book that might be in a more public setting. Another method would be book chests, enforced chests, too heavy or cumbersome to steal as a piece of furniture, too difficult to break into quickly, safeguarded with locks, could keep books safe, especially if your collection was smaller and you only had a few books to protect. The method I find most fascinating and enchanting, though, is that of book curses. A scribe would scribble in, right at the end or sometimes right at the start, a curse upon anyone who may steal a book, like this one. "Whoever steals this book of prayer, may he be ripped apart by swine. His heart be splintered, this I swear, and his body dragged along the Rhine." I I just recently had to pack up all of my books for a big move. I've just bought an old house, and I knew I'd be restoring a room to turn into my office and then library, and I started thinking about how am I going to properly catalog my books? How do I want to organize them? Because of the packing and donating process, I started to think about maybe creating a stamp for my ultimate favorite books. I know some people write, "This book is property of so-and-so," in their book, or some people have stickers with a similar bit of writing. But I've done some block printing in my day, the method of drawing out a design on a block of wood, rubber, or other surface, carving it out, and then essentially using it as an intricate stamp. And I thought, what if I made a beautiful book stamp? As I lovingly put the books onto my brand new shelves, I stamped each one in process, a custom book plate for my favorite books. I googled images of book stamps for inspiration and found that book plates have a very old history. Known as ex libris, Latin for from the books of, the earliest known book plates belonged to Pharaoh Amenhotep III from the 1300s BCE. They were small blue enameled ceramic plates believed to have been attached to a box of papyrus scrolls or to a scroll itself. As technology evolved and the printing press came into use, book plates became personalized and customized labels, usually relating to the book owner through motifs, a name, a coat of arms, or a unique design that was pasted into the front of a book. Jack London's Ex Libris has a wolf face framed by two snowshoes. Ernest Hemingway's depicts a bullfighter and a log cabin in the woods. Historians in particular love to find book plates in old books because, apart from being beautiful, they help us better understand the provenance of a book, who owned it, during what time, and a timeline of where it may have come from and gone to next. Similar to book plates were supra libros, typically a coat of arms or monogram that was on the front or sometimes spine of a book, usually gilded. Napoleon's library, for example, has his seal prominently displayed on the outside of his books. I have seen pretty book plates before, especially in children's books, so while enchanting, none of this surprised me. What did surprise me was this simple line at the top of the Wikipedia page for book plates. In the United States, book plates replaced book rhymes, which replaced book curses, after the 19th century. This is where we start to go back into history. Before book plates became the more in-fashion way of signifying that a book belonged to you, the United States had a period of using book rhymes. Much like curses, they were written into books to scare people away from stealing your books. The only example I could find was, "If this book you steal away, what will you say on Judgment Day?" Because books have been so expensive and relatively rare for much of human history, having your name written in a book, whether just handwritten in or with a book plate, could help you track down a book that was yours and may have been misplaced or stolen. These incredible charming rhymes would have been an attempt at putting an even more unique stamp in a book while also trying to scare off thieves. But it seems book rhymes weren't as popular as other methods, and was pretty localized to the United States. And as the history shows, they were born from the more spooky book curses. "If anyone steals it, may he die. May he be roasted in a frying pan. May the falling sickness and fever attack him, and may he be rotated and hanged. Amen." Book curses have been found around the world in Arabic, Greek, Latin, and other languages. Many of the curses would wish pain upon you, or expectedly, since they were most often written by religious followers, they'd curse you to damnation and excommunication. "The finished book before you lies, this humble scribe don't criticize. Whoever takes away this book, may he never on Christ look. Whoever to steal this volume durst, May he be killed as one accursed. Whoever to steal this volume tries, out with his eyes, out with his eyes. We might think that this would be a pretty terrible way to protect a book, but of course we need to remember that these would work because people back then would believe these curses. It was a very elite group of people that could read and write. It wasn't a population of people who would roll their eyes at a curse. It makes me question, however, were these scribes scared that other scribes would steal their books? Who else could read them or even know about them? Most of the research done about book curses has been done by an academic named Mark Dragan, who has written a book about book curses and where he has collected many of the curses he's found throughout his research, named Anathema: Medieval Scribes and the History of Book Curses. The book is out of print, and I haven't been able to find a copy anywhere, even though it's mentioned in most of the articles and research posted online. So I'm just putting it out into the universe that I'm making a book wish, the opposite of a book curse, and hope to encounter a copy of this book someday. Before you think about not returning that library book or forget about that book your friend lent you, think about this book curse from 1632 printed on a book in London. Steal not this book, my honest friend, for fear the gallows be your end. For when you die, the Lord will say, "Where is the book you stole away?" Thank you so much to everyone for listening to this episode of Book History. This is Ariel Bissett from Books Unbound podcast. The music was brought to you by CJ Bissett of Northern Soundhouse, my brother, the brilliant musician. And this episode was made possible by our patrons over at patreon.com/booksunbound.